I want to read a poem first to point a little bit about what I'm going to talk about. It's called Transition. It's by Robin Masowitz. Some of you might know it. Robin says, "It is in the gap of transition, or excuse me, it is the gap of transition that shakes us. It's the gap in transition that shakes us. Those moments before true movement has been achieved that brings us to a level of uncertainty. Let us embrace those moments when change has not yet come to see that this is a necessary moment before a new race has begun. In quiet, mindful moments, the transition shall appear as we open up our hearts to hear the silence we're now willing to hear. To see past all the dancing of the mind as a friend we cannot lovingly leave behind. For we are ready, we are now ready to embrace a new level of tranquility that's reflected at a deeper level of ourselves. As we accept change, may we move forward embracing all that is meant to be." See, that's where I think we're at. I thought, I don't know about you guys, but I think I thought when we moved into the University Friends Church, I thought that was the transition and that was it. But actually, I'm beginning to think that that was the gap before real movement came. And that the real movement is coming more now than it was just the change leaving leaving Soto. So I want to talk a little bit about what we're going to teach this year and talk a little bit about, you know, just what I think of as Sangha, as a group of who we are. Because I want to take a couple of steps back and think about where we were when Rodney first retired. And Tim and I decided to talk about the Paramis. And we spent a year talking about the Paramis. And I remember when, you know, we thought we taught that year. It was so, like, at the end of the year, Tim and I were more like, "Oh my God, that was so good. That was perfect. We'll never think of another thing to talk about." And then the year after that, we thought about the Four Noble Truths. And so we went through the Four Noble Truths, and that was really good. And then it just seemed to be natural that the dependent origination would come out of that. So then we're in this year, and Tim said, "Tori, we need something way easier than we've been doing. We need to bring it down a notch and back down in the body, not quite so up in the head." And so we decided that this year we want to talk about everyday Dhamma, how the Dhamma shows up in our everyday life. And it seems so perfect because when I think about what has happened since COVID kind of put us all in the house, I am stunned that I probably understand I understand Sangha at a level I didn't understand it before. So, you know, for some of you may know this, some of you may not, but Thich Nhat Hanh, I think he started this, but I don't quite remember, so I'm not going to say that he did. But Tim might, you might know Tim, but there's this idea that the next Buddha, meaning that the Buddha, we are in what is called a Buddha ending era. Think about that. A Buddha ending era. That means the Buddha's life and wisdom is ending. That's a little shocking. I didn't know that. But Kitasaro, one time at one of the teacher trainings, he just tossed that out. He said something, we were grumbling about the way things were in the world. And he said, oh, yeah, that's to be expected in a Buddha ending era. And I thought the Buddha ending era was coming because once the Dhamma came to the West, we kind of like messed it up. But that's not really what he was saying. What he's saying is the Buddha's wisdom lasts for a certain period of time. And, you know, it stretches out. It's been here for 2,600 years. And so I said, well, what do we do as practitioners if this is a Buddha ending era? And he said, we hold it. As long as we practice, we are stretching the ending longer and longer and longer. So back in Buddhist times, they thought that the Dhamma would end in 500 years. But because of all the practicing that happened after his death, it has expanded out and stretched out for 2,000 more years. So 2,600 years. And it could stretch out even longer. But the next Buddha that comes is considered, they say that that next Buddha, that future Buddha, would be the Sangha. And that never made sense to me until this year. That never made sense to me. Because I still think of the Buddha as just a being, one person that has some wisdom that he partakes and shares with everybody, and then, or she, and then we all get it. But this year, I have come to understand urban practice and how Buddha could be a Sangha more than I've ever understood this before. And it started in March when we had to stay home. Because in March when we had to stay home, I left a retreat. I was on the March month long. I was so happy to be there at Spirit Rock. I had done a lot to make sure I could do it. And this is my time. I'm ready. And I had to leave that March month long and come back to Seattle. 2 weeks before it ended, it just they cut it in half. They just stopped it 3 days in because things were looking pretty crazy, and there's a lot of foreign students there. They didn't know if those foreign students would be able to get back home, and it just, the whole world looked like it was falling apart. And so they sent us all home, and I remember thinking, I can't be still like this when I go home. I need to be at Spirit Rock in order to get the deep concentration I want. I can't go home. I got a son. I got granddaughter. It's like that. I can't do that. But then when I got home, a group of us decided to continue the retreat. And so we decided to continue it for 2 weeks. And I will never forget the day that I realized what was possible on retreat at home, because my granddaughter was having a full-on temper tantrum, and her dad was working out that I didn't have to worry about that. But I was in the middle of a meditation. I wasn't leading it, thankfully, but I was in the middle of this meditation. And she had this temper tantrum. And I remember thinking first, oh my God, this is going to disrupt my sit. Like I should go do something. And then second, oh wait, that's not my child. Don't get it twisted. That is child. I'm good right here. I've already done my duty. And so I just stayed sitting. And went right back to my meditation. and didn't lose my stillness at all. And it was the first time I realized that if I set my mind to stillness and concentration, even when I was at home, this is possible. So I started telling all these other teachers that we could, oh yeah, we could do this online. I think we could do it. A lot of older teachers, they were like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm like, I think we can do it. You should try it. All these teachers started trying retreats, and many of you have probably gone on retreats. If you haven't, you really got to try it. I was on a 9 bodies retreat. We were in deep concentration, and there were the George Floyd protests going on during the concentration, during the retreat. So people were practicing and hearing protests go past their doors. People were practicing and going to protest and coming back and staying in the retreat, that they didn't have to choose between the retreat and their life. And more and more and more, retreat after retreat after retreat, people began to see that they could practice at home in their own lives and still have access to stillness. That even though I am in my own apartment and we are on this call together, it still feels like Sangha. That we could begin to still feel each other even though we're talking through computers. Something about what has happened to the Insight Vipassana community from March until now is mind-blowing. I've sat in interviews with students who they are overwhelmed because they cannot, they've never been able to, they've never been able to do a retreat. They never were able to do a retreat for money or work time or whatever reason. But now they are doing retreats. There's just something that has changed, something that has happened, some transition that we are in that is huge and has had an impact on the Vipassana community in such a way that we are going to be the next Buddha. I could feel it. I could tell that Sangha itself, I could see how we could be the next Buddha. Not because somebody has to tell us anything, but because just the idea that we are all in each other's houses, that we are all somehow in each other's worlds, in each other's lives. It becomes real now. It's not like we all go to some other place, meet up, share the Dhamma, and then go back to our respective homes. We are with each other when we're at home and we're practicing at home. And something about that is going to be a major game changer. And we just won't see and won't know what that effect is going to be for some time to come. But I believe it will have a long time effect on us. I do not believe that once we start being able to go back to the land, that we will end all the Zoom. We will keep sits like this forever. So what does that have to do with what we're going to do in the next, over the course of the next year? What it means is that we want to bring the Dhamma and talk about the Dhamma in our everyday lives. So we're going to start talking from the framework of wealth. So this month, we're going to talk about how does the Dhamma show up around wealth? You know, when we are urban practitioners, we need to get a job. And I don't want to just get some old job. I want to have a career. I want to go after some prosperity. I want to create a world that I can buy things and do things. And sometimes we can talk about the Dhamma like that is somehow a curse and we should all be living under a rock somewhere. But instead, we're going to take this month and talk about what the Buddha actually thought about or talked about, or how did he relate to the prosperity and the acquiring of wealth and money and how we relate to it. So we can put it, so we can have money, wealth, resources, abundance, the notion of an abundance be a part of our everyday life and not something that is only available when things are going good. We're going to talk about technology, social media, and how does that show up with the Dhamma? I don't think it's all bad. I mean, I'm so happy for Zoom. Why in the world would I want to begin to think? It's sort of like a lot of the older teachers were so anti-screen. Like just at retreats, it was like, don't touch your screens. Don't be with your screens. Just no. No cell phones, no nothing. And now we spend our lives on Zoom. We spend our lives on screens. And so there's something that has shifted our understanding of what screens can be in relation to the Dhamma. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. There's a whole bunch of other topics. Tim got all the juicy ones. He's going to be the one that's talking about relationships, sex, stuff like that. I gave him the more difficult ones. But you know, he's talking about emotions. We're going to talk a little bit about politics and social justice and just all of the things that show up in our everyday lives. The things that we have to deal with all the time as practitioners, and we're urban practitioners. We're not monastics. And so how do we live in a world with all this stuff and be practitioners and not feel as though we need to live our personal life one way and our practice life another way? And because we're all at home with COVID and online, all of a sudden that becomes realistic. So that's pretty much my piece. I see that I went a little longer than I was supposed to, Tim. I tried not to, but that's pretty much my standard fare. I always go a little bit longer. I try to have Tim go first so I don't mess up his time. But I think I'm really looking forward to this, and I think I'm wanting to encourage you to think about. I think we're going to try to let you know in advance all of the different topics, but we just have to work out the months that we're going to talk about what. So I do know that for January, we're talking about wealth, and I do know for February, we're talking about technology, because those are my 2 months. And then we're going to figure out what we're going to talk about over the course. But I do think if there's something that you really want to talk about as part of your life, you can freely email Tim or I and let us know. Just send in some kind of like, I even if it's like, oh, I'm talking about wealth, but this is what I want to know. How do I deal with not having any wealth? I'm trying to get some wealth and I don't have any. How do I deal with that? I mean, even that is fine if you just let us know some things that you're working with and dealing with. We're going to bring the practice to that so that we can begin to see practice in our personal lives on the same level as the rest of our lives and not have it so siloed. All right. So I think that's good for me. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I'm so glad you're here. I'm just glad we're having a ceremony, and I'm glad I'm with Tim teaching. So, Tim, I guess I'll let you You talk as long as you want, Tim. Don't worry about the timing.
Thank you for sharing those words, Tori. And right. I mean, nobody knows that our time schedule except us. So.
Oh, that's right. I didn't even think about that.
We can pretend we're right on time.
You should have sent me a little chat. I wouldn't have been bearing my soul here.
Okay. All right. We'll just sit for a moment to let those the words be sinking that Tori so lovingly shared. Yeah, time is going to be one of the topics we will explore this year. And this is actually a really nice segue talking about Dharma in daily life and how that everyday Dharma interfaces with the three refuges and the five precepts, because they are very interconnected. And this past year, I know for many of us has held tremendous difficulty, tremendous challenges, uncertainty, you know, fear, maybe grief of loss of loved ones. So all this has bubbled up. Of course, the continued racial injustice and these all these hurts and wounds in society have started to really come forth. And hopefully this last year, you found that the Dharma helped you navigate it in some way, help you find some place of refuge, some place of ease, maybe even help you find a place of wisdom and compassion, of insight, even in the midst of all these difficulties, to start to see how happiness and ease can be realized in all conditions, in all situations. And this is really the quest that the Buddha began these 2,600 years ago. This is what we mean by taking refuge, or one way expression of this, is what do we draw upon? What do we rely upon for our strength, for our stability, for a place of wisdom, for a place of compassion? Where do we go to find that in our lives, in our spiritual lives, in our relationships? And it's an interesting thing to notice where that refuge actually is. Because I think we all go to refuges in different ways, in different times, in different circumstances. And this year of exploring daily life and some of these really kind of nitty-gritty topics like wealth, relationship, emotions, time, busyness. These things we often see, okay, there are barriers to my practice. There are barriers to my deepening of my insight, of development of my heart. But actually, they're very much integral to that practice. They're actually very much needed in that growth. And looking at the framework of the refuges, where do we take refuge when something difficult happens, when we're stressed, when we're worried, or even when we're excited or enamored about something? What refuge are we taking in that moment when life applies its pressure in all the small ways throughout each day, or those large ways, the significant ways that challenge us in a very deep way? What foundation do we rest upon? What ground do we find, and what foundation do we act from in those moments? And so this is a beautiful time, this beginning of the year, and this ceremony we do annually, is to reflect and to notice, where do I go when life pushes, when life exerts its disappointments, its grief, its loss, or even its joys? You know, where do I seek refuge? What do I truly rely upon? What do I ultimately trust in this moment in my life? And this may be conscious or maybe unconscious. And if we can ask this question really in a sincere way, one that's not with shame, without a sense of blame, how I should be or shouldn't be, but with really true, innocent curiosity, we start to see how our refuge actually changes from situations. Maybe when I feel insulted or I feel hurt, I might go into my defensiveness as a form of refuge. And that's a choice. It may be an unconscious choice, a habitual choice, where our practice starts to open up a different possibility of finding that refuge. But it all begins with noticing innocently and with true curiosity, where do I go? What do I depend upon? What do I think is true or believe is true in this moment? A core way of expressing this core question, is our refuge in this moment one of ignorance or one of wisdom? And looking back to this last year of dependent origination, we saw how ignorance fueled this whole cycle of selfing and suffering, and how that underpinned everything, the way we very much perceive the world, how we act to the world. And this last month, looking at the transcendental cycle of dependent origination, you can see how we can actually come from wisdom instead. So this becomes, again, these topics that we're going to be exploring this year, I think really lend to this reflection of the refuges. You know, I was just reflecting today, feeling that self narrative that maybe was self-critical, internal self-critic, and realizing right in that moment, I'm taking refuge in that belief of who I am, that belief of self that maybe is contracted and painful. And just seeing that that's where I was resting my actions and my belief and very much my very creation of my experience in that moment. Seeing it made it optional. Start to bring this freedom to find a different refuge. And so as we, this evening, yeah, for the rest of our lives, you know, noticing where that refuge we find, where do we go to? Through our reactivity, our prejudice? This is very deep and trusted. We know it. We know its terrain. But that willingness to go into our hearts, into wisdom. So that traditional way of expressing these refuges is the triple gem, the three refuges of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And Thwery spoke so beautifully of the third refuge of Sangha, of how we create this sense of community, whether we're sitting right next to the person or sitting in this very interesting way of connecting through internet, through the virtual space. And how that still has that power as we align our attention, as we choose to be with people who are like-minded, who are also seeking to understand the nature of suffering and the end of suffering. And there's the refuge of the Dharma, of how things actually are, to understand the very mechanism of how we create suffering and how that suffering is released. And then the first refuge of the Buddha, and how the Buddha was a person, an ordinary person, who was able to discover in a very deep and profound way how his mind worked, how his heart worked, and how his very relationship to himself, the way he constructed the world, held his suffering, and how the release of that led to a freedom and a peace that was unimaginable. And then we're blessed to have him be also a gifted teacher, that he taught for almost 80 years. And that became this wave of understanding of wisdom that's carried forth to this day. So these three refuges of the Buddha, of the Dharma, and the Sangha, reflecting on those. And the next time you find life pushing back on you, when you feel that struggle, when you feel that strife, noticing the habitual way to want to go into the contraction, the defensiveness, and say, okay, maybe there's a different refuge of the Buddha, of the Dharma, and of the Sangha. We can think of the refuges as this foundation that we rest upon. And from that foundation, that's where our actions flow, how we act internally and how we act externally. How we think, how we move our bodies, how we interact with each other. And one expression of this is the five precepts, these ethical trainings that help us live a life that's based in non-harm and ultimately based in wisdom. And this is an expression of these refuges. If we rely on the refuge of ignorance, the refuge of contraction, of isolation, our actions will reflect that. We'll steal, we'll harm, we'll lash out, we'll tell lies, because that makes sense from that foundation. And yet there's this other foundation of our wisdom, of our compassion, of the three refuges. And then we find these five precepts to undertake the training to refrain from, naturally flow from. So the first precept is undertaking the training to refrain from killing or harming other beings. And we could spend a year talking about just this one precept and all its nuances. And just holding that one precept of non-harm, of non-harming in all the ways of expression that could be, and including ourselves, our own physical, mental, emotional well-beings, to have that deep commitment of non-harm. The second precept is to refrain from stealing, refraining from taking that which is not freely offered. Again, all the nuances of what does it really mean for something to be freely offered, to be freely given, and how often we lead from our place of lack, our place of insufficiency, our place of greed, and take what is not offered, to refraining from stealing. The third precept is to refrain from sexual misconduct, refrain from using our sexuality in a way that causes harm to other people and to ourselves. And again, this precept, we'll explore sexuality one of these months and how it's such a vital part of being human, such a beautiful part of being human. And it also has its shadow of its distortion, of its so many different levels, from the very subtle way that we hold each other in a certain light, to, of course, the violence and the intense trauma that can cause from sexual harm, to refraining from sexual harm and misconduct. And the fourth precept is refrain from lying, from speaking that which is not true. The Buddha once said that anyone who is willing to tell a lie, there's nothing they're not capable of doing. There's no harm they're not capable of doing, because there's basic denial of what is actually true, which is actually the way things are. And then the final precept is to refrain from drinks and drugs that lead to intoxication and heedlessness. Because that heedlessness, when we're intoxicated, when we lose contact with how things actually are, there's no precept that's safe. That each one of those is so much easier to harm, to steal, to misuse our sexuality, to lie. So taking that commitment toward being clarity of mind, clarity of heart. And so these five precepts are refraining from killing, from stealing, from sexual misconduct, from lying, and from intoxication, are really an expression of this deeper refuge of our wisdom, of our compassion. And so this year, as we go through all these different aspects of being human, this will perhaps be a thread that we'll weave and understand as we go through. So I'm very happy to be here with you this evening. And in a little while, we'll have the ceremony for the taking the precepts and the refuges. And also have before that, we'll have some small group discussion about exploring how's the Dharma been a refuge for you this year. But first, let's take a short break, about 5 minutes, and just direct your attention to the virtual Dana baskets. So I just put a message in the chat for the donate page for both Seattle Insight and for the teachers. All right, we'll see you back here in 5 minutes. And now we're going to transition into the chanting ceremony.
There, can everybody see that? We're good? All right, great. This is our chant. we'll stay, have everybody stay on mute, and I'll just chant, and I will know that you're chanting along with me. We're going to say the first part. Those of you that don't know about this chant, I want to explain a little bit about what it is. This first top part, the Namo Tassa is called, is really, it's just a, it's like a salutation to begin the chant, where we're just paying homage to the Buddha for the fact that he became enlightened, is basically what we're doing. We say that in Pali, something about saying it in Buddha's own language makes this, I guess, homage more connecting. So we say it in Pali. We don't say the English. And then we move down to the, we say it three times, and then we move down to the refuges, and we're actually going to take the refuges. We're going to say it the first time in Pali, which is on the left, and then the second time in let's see, and then zoom in a bit. Let's see if I can make it a little bit bigger. All right, I'm going to make it bigger, and then I'll move us down the page when we get ready to go down to the other ones. So that might be a little bit too big. Can't see the end of it, huh? There we go. So then we're going to go down the second. We're going to say, what we do is we say the let me see, I should be able to. We say the part on the left in Pali, and then we say the part on the right in English. And what this is we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, basically what Tim was talking about. But we say it three times. So there's a way in which saying it three times helps solidify. It's almost like you can set an intention for something. So if something gets difficult, this is what I'm going to do. But somehow saying it three times, I think, emphasizes in the mind that we really do want to go to the Buddha. The Buddha being whatever your understanding is of how you relate to the Buddha, or the Dhamma, the wisdom practice, or the Sangha as a refuge, and learning to accept this as a refuge three times. Then we're going to move right after that. I'm just going to move our page down so that we can actually quickly go into the precepts. And in the precepts, we are going to say it in Pali, and then in English, and then in Pali, and in English, and in Pali, and in English, and in Pali, and in English. All right, so. Some people say these in prayer pose. I do not, but if you say it in prayer pose, that's fine.
Tori, I just sent a link with the a file for that, if that's easier for you.
With the what?
It's a link to the chant.
Oh, if anybody wants to pull it up on their own computer, I see. All right, I'll ring a bell for us to begin. Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Sangham Saranam Gacchami. To the Buddha, I go for refuge. To the Dhamma, I go for refuge. To the Sangha, I go for refuge. Dutiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. For the second time, to the Buddha, I go for refuge. For the second time, to the Dhamma, I go for refuge. And for the second time, to the Sangha, I go for refuge. Tatiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. For the third time, to the Buddha, I go for refuge. For the third time, to the Dhamma, I go for refuge. For the third time, to the Sangha, I go for refuge. Panatipata, veramadi sikapatam samadhiyami. I undertake the training to refrain from killing. Adinatana veramadi sikapatam samadhiyami. I undertake the training to refrain from taking that which is not freely given. Kamesu machachara viramadi sikapatam samadhiyami. I undertake the training to refrain from sexual harm. Musawada viramadi sikapatam samadhiyami. I undertake the training to refrain from harmful speech. Sira, Miriya, Madhya, Pamadatatana, Viramadi, Sikapadam, Samadhiyami. I undertake the training to refrain from intoxication, which leads to carelessness. Miss our cords. We don't have any cords. Oh, we have your own cord. Maybe that's what we should have did. We should have said, bring your own cord so we can tie them. Look at you guys. Got your cords. I'm so proud of you. Okay, well, we take those cords and wrap them up there. Tie them on ourselves. All right, I'll tell you, Leslie, what a cord is. So usually when we do these refuges and precepts at home, I mean, at the center, we would pass out, they're called protection cords, but that's the red kind of cords or red yarn you see wrapped around a lot of practitioners' wrist. And so we would pass them out and then we would share with each other and tie those cords, put the refuges precepts into the cords and then tie them up and then let them fall off naturally. But we're not together to have those cords. Maybe next year, well, I'm hoping we're not necessarily online, but even if we're in space, I'm hoping we will still have an online capacity, so we will remind people to bring their own cords for next year. So I get to end with some announcements. But I got some special announcements that I'm going to talk about. But first, you know, some of you mentioned that we are not the Sims of old. We are not Rodney Sims. It's a little bit different here. We have lots of different sets that appeal to lots of different people. And for a long time, Sims was just that weekly set that appealed to people who would sit 45 or 40 minutes and have a Dhamma talk. And pretty much you're in silence for 2 hours. But we have a sit on Sunday mornings that's a family sit. It's more engaging. We have little stories and we have a guided meditation that's shorter, 25 minutes or 30 minutes sit. And we spend some time sharing the Dhamma, shorter Dhamma talk, so we have time to share. So that sit is only an hour and a half. It starts at 10. There's sits on Thursday, both on the east side and at Capitol Hill. These are all virtual. There's a possibility of doing this. If you're under 40 or around 40-ish, there's a sit on Wednesday nights, on the second and fourth Wednesday nights, that so it's led by Carrie Peterson, so that's for that group. And then we have our regular sit still on Monday nights. So there's a way in which all those sits are all of different flavor, and you can find the kind of sit, either the timing or the nature of it, that most fits the kind of practitioner you are. We have drop-in sits that some of you mentioned, which is they're short. They're like 30 minutes, 45 minutes or so on every single morning except for Wednesday mornings. So on Mondays and Fridays, it's Dhamma and Recovery with Susan Alatrico. Tuesdays, it's Tim, and I'm on Thursdays. And then Suze has a special afternoon sit, 4 to 5, where she does some metta. That's a good way to kind of clear, end the day off and some discussion. I think the other sits, there might be a little bit of discussion. The Thursday one is just a sit, pretty much very little discussion. And then there's more discussion on the Monday, Friday one. But it's not just sitting and meditating. There's a way in which Sims is really expanding. So we offer also a lot of classes, much more classes than we used to. So we have the intro classes that there's two that are going to start up here this month on the, let me see, when is it? On the 4th, on the 12th, next week, on the 12th, Tuesday, it's Steve Wilhelm is going to do it from the east side. And then on the 14th, Tim is going to start up a new class, or 6 weeks. So if you know someone that's interested in starting their practice, or if you're interested in just re-engaging, those intro classes are great. They go 6 weeks, once a week. And there's a day of mindfulness on the 27th. No, it's not. There's a day of mindfulness on the 17th, I think it is, for the beginning classes. Nope. I'm not sure what the day of mindfulness day is. It might be on the 19th, but I'm not quite sure. But there's a Saturday at the end of the beginning class. There's a day of mindfulness for that. So that's for, you're right, it is on the 20th. And then there is the Buddhist essentials that the local Dharma leaders do. These are like the senior kind of practitioners at Sims. They teach beyond just the intro class into the Buddhist essentials. And they do the third Wednesday of each month as a way to learn more into the different lists that we have. And then we have non-residentials. And the only one that we're going to have for a while is Rodney's non-residential that's coming up at the end of January. If you've never done extended practice online, that is a great opportunity to try. If you're not up for a retreat, try a weekend. And Rodney's going to do a Saturday and a Sunday, the very last Saturday and Sunday of the month. And he really offers a great extended practice. So there's a couple more things I want to talk about, and then we're going to be done. But a couple more things that are kind of new, and I can't talk a lot about them, but I'm so excited that I'm the one that gets to talk about them that I still want to say it. The first is, I know a lot of you have been struggling with our website, and we are finally going to upgrade that website. We have been working diligently, Cheryl. Actually, I should say Cheryl Maynard's been working diligently, but she has a whole team with her, and they are all putting together the finishing touches on a new website so that it'll be easier to access some of the information. It'll make more sense. It'll be more user-friendly, and we can maintain that website at Sims rather than having to pay someone else to maintain it. So that we're very happy about that. So that will probably be coming within the next couple of months. I'd say February, sometime in February, sometimes in March. Second thing is that during this whole COVID thing, the university friends, you may know, had a homeless program in the lower level. And that homeless program has left. And that created the space for us to be able to go down and have a space that is 24/7. Instead of renting out the sanctuary, we can, in effect, create a Sims-like space for ourselves that would be ours permanently. And so we still have to work out the details to see if it's wide enough, big enough, and how much it would cost to actually fix it up, change the flooring, you know, just what we did. You know, you wouldn't know, but Soto used to be a warehouse. So those people that saw that warehouse before the Soto that we were used to, they were a little bit like, I don't know if you can make this kind of sacred, but it was beautiful. And so we have an opportunity again, because of the gift of COVID in a roundabout way, to be able to create our own space. And so the reason why I'm telling you all this is because I don't want you to find out in an email when I say, we need some help. We need some finances to help us get the money together to be able to do the tenant changes and make all the changes we need. So raising the capital campaign to be able to do that. And we might even need some help tearing down things and busting out walls and things like that. So I don't know if it's going to happen, but the way my heart is, I've already decided it's going to happen. So I don't want to lead you astray. I don't want to lead you astray. I promised Rob I would not do that. But yeah, I've already pretty much banked on it. So I'm trying to keep myself together and not getting too overly excited. But I just wanted you to know. And then I think that's it. I think that's all the announcements. But there is just this opportunity that when we do get back together again, we will be getting back together again in our own space with the possibility of being able to meet whenever we want to. All right. So just keep that in mind. You'll be sending metta so we can have it. I think that's all I have, Tim. What about you? If you want to say anything before I, before we say goodbye.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for all those exciting announcements. Just one more reminder about Donna, you know, that our tradition, the tradition is everything, no one's turned away for the inability to pay. And events like this, you know, freely offered, and including our, the teacher's support. And so there's a possibility or capacity for you to donate to both SIMS and the teachers. And the best way you can find on that website page, I just put in the chat. And this is part of, you know, as much of the tradition as the wisdom teachings, the ethics teachings, and the generosity, not only for Donna, but also just generosity in your life. So thank you in advance for your support of SIMS and the teachers, and Happy New Year.
Yeah. I'll leave us with a little short Rumi quote. My heart is so big, it's almost, I'm sorry, my heart is so small. My heart is so small, it's almost invisible. How can you place such big sorrows in it? Look, he answered, your eyes are even smaller, yet they behold the world. My heart is so small, it's almost invisible. How can you place such big sorrows in it? Look, he answered, your eyes are even smaller, yet they behold the world. Thank you so much. I so appreciate your time, your practice, the sense of being renewed together. And we'll see what this year has to offer us. I'm looking forward to it. No telling. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're welcome to unmute if you want to say goodbye.